Welcome to Nintendo Dad's episode 16. On tonight's episode, Awada is looking for one game to rule them all. You'll quite possibly be playing. You'll quite possibly be playing more Nintendo tabletop soon. We've got fan reviews and so much more on tonight's episode. So Zachary, please, sir, could you cue the music?
Hello, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Nintendo Dads Podcast. My name is Zach Erickson, and tonight is February 25th, 2015. Joining me tonight for this wonderful evening of discussing Nintendo and all the goodness around it is Justin Masson. What's going on, Justin?
I am apparently tongue-tied yet again. I think this is the second or third episode where I have fumbled over my words.
So. You know what? I actually, like... You threw me for a loop because I thought you were going to restart, and I was like, meh, he's still going. All right, no stopping this train.
No, it's in the professional voice actor world. That's just taking takes. That's all that is.
Yeah, there's no rehearsals. Actually, you know, I watched this documentary, not to get too far off track right away, but I watched this documentary about the making of The Shining, and apparently Stanley Kubrick didn't believe in rehearsals. He just did everything straight off and recorded everything.
Really?
He did like 100 takes for like every shot almost. It was crazy.
I've done a fair bit of like voiceover work for training modules and stuff, and that's like, I don't like the kind of the methodology is that when you mess up, you just don't stop and start again. You don't do another take. You just,
there's no point. Do it. You already did the good part once. So
yeah,
whatever.
So you just kind of fumble and you say, all right, take three on this one and just reread.
There you go. Yeah. Right on. So there, behind the curtain, everybody. Joining us as well tonight is Jesse Waldack. What's going on, Jesse?
We'll just fix it in post, that's all.
Oh, there's no fixing it in post. I'm way too lazy for that business.
This is a live to hard drive, folks.
Right.
When I did Roundtable, I took editing way too seriously. It would literally take me 4 hours to edit a 1 hour show.
Totally, man.
And
it's
the show we had Roger on, that was like 2 hour show. It took me a day to edit that thing.
And you know what the thing is?
It was nuts.
Is that it just makes this more real and endearing is kind of how I feel. Plus, I'm way too lazy. Plus, it means that our fans can actually hear the episode sooner. So, yeah, right on. Awesome. Well, there you go. That's a little podcasting behind the scenes. Behind the podcaster's studio or something. Anyway, let's get to what we've been playing, everyone. How's that sound?
I like it.
Oh, sorry. Was it?
Don't worry, we'll fix it in post.
there you go. I was just looking for the button. All right. So who's going first tonight? Jesse, what have you been playing tonight?
I've been playing more Majora's Mask, which if you would have told me 6 months ago that I would have put more than 5 hours into this game, I would have thought you were crazy, because I've never put more than 5 hours into that game before throwing in the towel. But with the minor tweaks that they've done and put in the hint system, I'm getting ground.
So where are you now then?
I just got the Zora mask, so I'm running around in the Pirate's Cave area now, trying to figure out what to do.
Oh, like the okay, sure.
And I also have been trying to do as many of the side quests as I can as I go along. Mm-hmm. I've already got, I think, almost half of the heart containers. I still don't have the giant wallet yet. I still have the only one that can hold up to 200.
Oh, isn't there a specific thing you have to do for the giant wallet? Because I was kind of expecting that it was going to be like once you hit 1,000 coins or something, or 1,000 rupees in the bank. And then he was like, oh, awesome. Here's 5 more rupees. And I was like, wait, what?
The spider cursed guy in the swamp. You know, save him. And then
I thought I already did that, though. And he gave me the mask of truth or whatever he's wearing. The one that you can talk to animals.
Well,
maybe it's a Skulltula house in a different location that I'm that it's supposed to be. I don't know.
I like how distraught you sounded about that, by the way, Zach. You're like, I thought I already did that.
I did that already. That doesn't...
I don't want to do it again.
Well, I got there, and when I was running around in the swamp, I did that area. There's 30 of them you have to kill and collect the tokens.
Mm-hmm.
But I killed a few of them in ways that I couldn't reach the token.
Oh, that's the worst.
So I figured, all right, I'll just come back when I have a boomerang or the hook shot or something. Mm-hmm. So I just now have the kind of boomerang-ish things with the Zora mask. It's not really controllable, but it's better than nothing. So I think
you're actually going to have the hook shot very quickly as well.
Yeah, because I see a lot of hook shot targets where I'm at now. So I think that's the next item I'll be finding. Then when I do find it, then I'll go back to the swamp and do that.
Right on. Cool. But yeah, so you feel I've been playing a little bit of that as well. I think I'm at the end of the final temple. There's this big boss fight with like a couple of worms. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. I definitely love in that game, again, kind of like what you were alluding to, the hint system I feel is really good. And just overall, it's really surprising how fun that game is.
The one thing I kind of don't like is, you know, you beat the boss of a temple and then something changes in the environment, whether the swamp gets cleaned up or the ice melts in the Goron area.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you go back to day one, everything's a mess again. So you have to go back. And if you want to clean it up to do whatever post-dungeon tasks you can do within your 3-day cycle, you have to go in and beat the boss again.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that is the biggest pain of it.
I didn't do that yet in the swamp area, so there's a lot of stuff I know I have to go back for the swamp. But I think I must have killed that second boss a dozen times.
Mm-hmm. That second boss is a lot of fun, though. I really like that second boss.
It is.
You're just spinning around the track, basically, chasing that guy.
Yeah, and then it took me a while to get the big, I forget what they call it, but it's basically a barrel-sized bomb.
Or all the powder keg?
Yeah, that was fun. Mm-hmm. I was able to get that. I did the Goron races. It took me like 7 or 8 tries to win it. I finally won that. And then that gave me the gold powder to get an upgraded sword.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so you did get the sword then, hey?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got that one as well. Yeah, I
tried it like two or three times before I finally got that part right, because you have to do the initial sword upgrade in day one. Otherwise, you don't have time to...
Right, that's what I did as well, yeah. Upgrade. And you've got to get the gold that day, too, because
you have to beat the boss, you have to get the gold, and then... Yeah. But at least after you beat the boss the first time, you can pretty much jump right to the boss. So
yeah.
You don't have to do whole,
yeah,
you
don't that's have to the nice thing.
The whole dungeon again.
That's the nice thing is that even if you, you know, like, once you've reached the boss, even if you die, and like, oh, crap, I got to go and, you know, get a bunch more... you know, I got to go and find some fairies or something, right? Then you can always teleport straight to the boss after that first try.
I haven't had that problem yet.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of the situation I've had right now with the current boss that I'm on. So, yeah, I've been playing
all 4 bottles.
I actually only have 2 bottles right now. Maybe that's my problem.
I was able to get all 4 already. I did everything I can do in the milk. The branch area.
Okay.
That was kind of a fun arc.
Oh, you did protect the ranch or whatever?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I need to go back and do that.
That's where you get your other 2 bottles.
Oh, is it? Because I think there's one with a monkey. There's a monkey one, and maybe I did get one from the ranch.
You get one at the end of day one from the younger girl, and then you get the second one at the, I think... When you do the afternoon one, second day 2 afternoon event with the older sister.
Oh, okay.
Think.
That makes sense. Yeah, right on. So you're still chugging along with that then. Awesome. Been playing anything else?
That's all I've been doing all week.
Right on. Cool. What about
continuing enhancements on my new network? We just got the house wired up with gigabit network ports in almost every room in the house.
So when do you go in to get the port that Keanu Reeves has on the back of his neck? Like when does that happen?
That'll be a while.
Kung Fu.
Whoa.
Right on. Cool, man. What about you, Justin? What have you been playing?
I have been diving into more of A Link Between Worlds. And I'm really liking it. I am about 3 hours into it right now. And so I had a moment during playing the game that I was going to text actually both of you and be like, what? This is crazy. I can't believe this just happened. Now, Zach, have you played it before?
Yeah, I've played through the whole thing.
Okay. And have you, Jesse, Link Between Worlds?
Yes. I don't think I 100%ed it, but I came really close. And I know my son has 100%ed it. So, I think I might be missing one or two of the collectibles.
Okay. So, I mean, you're going through it. It feels like a link to the past. There's a familiarity of it. You do your missions. So I've gone around and I've gone through like two or three different dungeons. I've been turned into the painting. I've run around the map as a painting. I'm going to my next mission to find my next piece to get the Master's Sword. And I get to an area where I can't really go any further. Like I don't have the weapon that I need, in this case, the hammer, to cross the drawbridge to go into the dungeon. So I'm kind of like, okay, well, I'll explore around and see if I can find something else. And these signs keep leading me back to my house, Link's house, where a shop has been set up. And I show up there, and the character's name is Rovio, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Rovio. And there Rovio. He offers...
He's basically awesome. Nabbit.
Yeah. He offers that I can rent every single piece of equipment that I need for the entire game.
Yeah, dude.
And I was like, whoa, hey, wait, what? This is different. Because typically in Link or in Zelda fashion, I need to complete a castle or a dungeon. That dungeon gives me the tool by which I need to complete the next dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
So this is such a really weird kind of juxtaposition of how we're typically used to playing these kind of games. And I was actually quite shocked by it because I was like, now I feel like you've given me the toolkit. You've mm-hmm. given me the toolkit to do everything. So the problem solving of the situation of the recall of that kind of like that reward, because when you finish a really tough dungeon and you get that item that you're like, oh, now I know that I know that I need the bombs to go here because I know how to do all these things. There's a reward part of that that you understand. And now to just be able to purchase all of my tools in one set, in one go, it kind of felt like it took away some of those things that I'm used to in regards to the reward of challenging. Because now, as I'm wandering through the map and I see a puzzle, okay, well, there's a cave that has rocks in front of it. Okay, I know I need the bombs. Okay, I have the bombs. Bang. Right? Like, it mm-hmm. takes away some of those levels of complexity that I feel like sometimes you need in the game to feel that level of accomplishment. But at least, or I guess I should say that's at least my experience with it. So I was a bit shocked by that. Now, I'm not saying it's destroying my like of the game, but I was like, that was a very odd approach to take in the actual game. And I thought was a very, just very, very different. So I don't know. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
I remember that. And I remember it is sort of like, it does take away a little bit from that. Again, like you were saying, the reward aspect of the new items, right? Where it's like, man, I rocked that dungeon and now I have this new item halfway through. And the boss is going to be based on this particular item. And so it feels almost less structured and less intentional. You know, like, because basically, because there was that expectation that the dungeon, a specific dungeon, was designed around the fact that you're going to go into this space, you're going to see something you can't use yet, but you're going to find an item that halfway through the dungeon, you'll be able to use it, and you'll be using that particular new item throughout the rest of the dungeon, and you'll probably use it as well at the boss. And they kind of do that in this game, where there still is, you know, I mean, you have to have a boomerang to get into the boomerang dungeon, right? Or something like that. Or the hammer, you use the hammer a lot in the hammer dungeon. And so that is still kind of cool. It is nice, however, that you are able to decide which order you want to do some of the dungeons in. Like once it kind of opens up and you get to that point where you're able to rent them. But it's still, I see what you're saying. It definitely opens it up more, though, at the same time. And basically, I don't know if you've gotten there yet, but what happens is that you're able to then buy... I think part of the fun of that game was you are able to buy the items from Rovio eventually. Is it Rovio or Ravio? Rovio's the... One of them is the Angry Birds company, and one of them is the rabbit. Ravio.
Well, either which way, I'm able to get it from the rabbit.
Yes. So it's... So basically what you're doing is... you can buy them from him so that you don't lose them when you die. Because that's what happens when you rent them, right? Is that if you die for whatever reason, then you lose that item and you have to go and pay for it again. But if you buy it, then you can then go, have you found, I don't want to spoil too much, but then you can, there's also an ability to upgrade all of your items as well.
No, so I literally have just gone to the point where he's, where I'm renting them, where he's just like, all right, well, you can rent them until you die. And then they come back to me. And I'm like, all right, well, fair enough. I've got 1,200 rupees here. And this cost me a total of $20. So, yeah, I'm all right.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's still, it's, I do like it, but I still, I absolutely agree with what you're saying at the same time. I don't know. What about
I'm
you,
also
Jesse?
Going.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Jesse, go ahead. Jesse, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. And you're not that far yet, but when you get to the, you'll get eventually get to the point where you have 6 dungeons available to you, and you can pick which ones, which order you want to put them in. Which, on one hand, I think is a cool concept. I like being able to choose which ones I wanted to do. But on the other hand, because they don't know the order you're doing them in, they kind of have to dumb the levels down.
Yeah, they can't stack them all.
With like 6 or 7 hearts. Mm. Where, like in Ocarina of Time, you know, by the time you get to that 7th dungeon, you have to have at least 12 hearts. Otherwise, you're purposely avoiding collecting them.
Yeah, and they can't stack.
Ramp up the difficulty.
You can't stack the, or kind of, you know, build on previous dungeons or previous things that you've learned, right? So like, oh, well, in this dungeon, I use the ice arrows, And then in this dungeon, I can swim or something. I can't remember all the different items, but you know, being able to use ice and swim at the same time, you could end up with some really cool puzzles that when you use those two things combined, whereas they tend to do them totally separately in A Link Between Worlds.
Right. Mm. It's still a fun game. I think it's of all those Zelda games, I think I've had the most fun with it just because it is an easier game and it didn't take me too long to go through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am loving it. I think the mechanics are very cool. The graphics are awesome. When I'm playing it, I don't want to stop playing it. Like, it's just it's almost like a really good meal that I know is going to end eventually. So I'm just taking little pieces at a time to savor it because I think it's just fantastic. And there's a lot of nuances that I think it's just doing really well. But it was just a very striking, it was like, oh, wait, I'm sorry, what? It was just a very, not what you would usually expect from what they have taught you, so to say, up to this point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I said it before, but when I played that game, I marathoned it in 3 days.
I think it took me about a month to play through it is about how long I took. But again, I was very similar to you, Justin, when I was doing the last dungeon and the ending of that game, I remember staying up for I probably spent 3 or 4 hours playing that game, just in a single sitting, and then was I love the ending of that game. So.
Hmm.
Yeah, I put 19 or 20 hours into it, so it is not a tiny game by any means. It's just short by Zelda standards.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I played it in 3 or 4 days. Because nice. Once I started playing it, I could not put
it's
it
so
down.
Good, yeah.
That doesn't happen to me very often. Normally, after I play an hour, I get tired or bored or need to do something else. But that game, I couldn't put down.
Yeah. Right on, man. So, is that all you've been playing?
No, I'm also going to shamefully admit that I've been playing some Pokemon Shuffle.
Oh, dude, I've been playing a lot of Pokemon Shuffle. What stage are you on? What name? What number?
49?
Yeah, it sounds like we're about the same spot.
Yeah, and the reason I say I'm shameful about it is because I don't like Candy Crush or those things.
Robot.
Easy to pick up. Like, you know, it's kind of like, it's that.
Wow. The fact that you just stopped. Hello? Okay, we're just going to keep going then. All right, so anyways, Pokemon Shuffle.
Yeah, so I typically don't like these kind of games, but it's great because it like if you've got 5 minutes to spend or 10 minutes to kind of just like do nothing where you don't really dive into like a bigger game like Link, or you don't have the 20 minutes for like Codename Steam, this is a great like, okay, well, I'll just play a couple, you know, I'll fight a couple Pokemon, close the lid, I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm actually enjoying it. I still don't fully understand what I'm doing. Like when they say, you know, it likes the, you know, the defense against it is the, I don't know, water Mafferny and like Pokemon words. And I'm like, I don't know what the hell that is. I'm like, but I'm just going to move tiles. Yay.
All I ever do is hit the optimize button and then maybe I will hit it a few times so that I get the right mega evolved Pokemon that I want. And I like how they handle the mega evolution in that game, actually. Where you have the meter, right? And so you just like fill up the meter until you mega evolve the guy, and then he has like a special move. So
yeah, it's interesting.
It actually is a lot more fun than I was expecting it to be. It's very much, it's good because it's that sort of pick up and play, play a few rounds and then come back to it and whatever. I don't plan on ever spending any money on it. I have spent my gems or whatever, the jewels to buy additional moves, but that was just because I was like, I'm kind of feeling like playing a little more this time. And so like for, what is it? 3 jewels, you get like 20 moves or something like that, or 20 rounds. And I was like, meh, I'll just do that. Why not? And you get like probably a good 20 minutes or half an hour out of that sort of a transaction, I guess. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. I thought it was, I really enjoy it for sure. So, yeah. Finally, I'm going to just talk a little bit. Sorry, is that all you got, Justin?
Yeah, that's it. I have been playing a little bit of Codename Steam, but...
You have been? Have you beat the demo yet?
No.
Wow.
Still getting whooped.
Oh, man.
I can get about 75% done a level, the level I'm stuck on, and then they kill one of my characters, and I'm kind of hosed.
Oh, is it the final one where you're like going to the smoke or something like that?
No, not quite there.
Okay.
No, like I've just got this is my second stage after I got my second player.
Okay. Man.
Yeah.
Right on.
At least I'm not the only one who can't play that game.
the trick is using the, what is his name? John, using him as like using his grenades or whatever, but, keeping them close together, I found, is kind of, I don't know. It's weird. That's such a fun game, though. I love that game.
I wouldn't say, Jesse, I can't. Yeah. I wouldn't say I can't play the game. It's just one of those things. And I like the challenges. Like, I like the fact that I'm not able to beat the level. It's just more of a, you know, I need 15 minutes, like 15 solid minutes. And really my gaming increments are like 5 minutes. With the occasional like 2 hour stint here and there. So, that's the thing. But like, I'm actually getting to a point because I'm down. I think 20 demos left of it. And I know the game doesn't come out for another, you know, couple of weeks. So I'm like,
it's only 2 weeks away,
sparingly.
Hey? Oh, it's only 2 weeks away.
Yeah, it's the 13th.
Oh, man.
Yeah, 2 weeks away, it's the 13th. So I'm like, I want to use it sparingly, but I also, because now, Zach, you mentioned that the save data transfers over to your purchase game, correct?
The gold that you earn does, and I think you can transfer a special weapon across, is what it says. So, because it sounds like you collect weapons as well in the game, or you can buy upgradable weapons and things like that, because each character has their sort of signature weapon, and they also have their alternate weapon. So, for example, I think John Henry, the main guy, has just a regular, like a 3 steam. It costs 3 steam to shoot normally, right? And then if you, I don't know if you're far enough to have the second abilities unlocked, but he also has what's called like a medicarbine, which is basically like a healing shot. So you can, I don't know if you're far enough to use that second ability yet, but that ability can also be traded, like that, like you could give him a different gun instead. So you could give him, I don't know. So you would have a different gun that you could trade through as a, like, you'd have a stock of inventory or whatever that you could give each character a specific gun. And I'm guessing that the gun that transfers over is something like that, that would be used as a secondary weapon. So those are the two things that transfer over.
So cool. Thank you.
So, yeah. Finally, I'm just going to talk a little bit. I know I talked a little bit last week about Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate. I played quite a bit more of it this week, and I actually managed to play online with some people as well, which was really fun. Now, let me tell you. So, basically, like I said last week, the big sort of cycle is you, and I've played enough now that I'm in the second area. Basically, the single player campaign, you play through a bunch of quests, whether it's go and fight this monster and kill this monster, or go and harvest some mushrooms or harvest some herbs or go and steal some eggs from this monster or that kind of thing. And every quest takes 50, you have a 50 minute time limit, which is for a portable game, I feel like that's a little bit too long, frankly. But anyways, having said that, you once you get through all of the missions or all of the quests within a specific area, then you are given an expedition mission or a couple of those, where basically instead of the predefined map, it randomizes an area for you, and you have to go and hunt a specific monster, and you don't necessarily have to bring it down, but you at least have to engage with it and fight enough that something gets knocked off and you pick up that piece and then run back to town, and get out of there. So, after you do that, then you end up doing a couple more things and you end up getting, you know, the mission to go to the next area. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. I honestly, like, it's really, really fun. But when you are defeated in that game, it feels like crap. And I honestly, like, as 50, the last time I played it, which was probably, I think it was like, I don't know, late last week, I was playing it and I was like, man, all right, here's this mission. I'm going to take down this monster. And if you faint three times, like if you die three times within a single mission, then you fail the mission. And I was fighting this monster one-on-one, this huge, I can't remember what it's called, this huge tusk, he's got these tusks on his face or whatever. I think he was actually in the demo. I can't remember what he's called. The monsters all have weird names in the game. But I played it, I kid you not, I had less than 10 minutes left on the clock, and I died the third time, and like, I looked back at the last 45 minutes of my life and just thought, screw this game. And put it down and was like, I haven't picked it up since. I feel like I need to go back to it though, because it is really fun. And the different weapons, there is so much variety in the like available gameplay. I picked up, initially when I started, I picked up what's called the Great Blade, which is like this enormous sword that takes forever to swing, but is really, really powerful. And so I started with that, and then I moved on to the dual blades, which is kind of exactly what it sounds like. It's like, you know, a small blade in each hand, and it's a lot faster, you know, lots of hits at once. And the amount of depth and complexity in the gameplay mechanics is really, really interesting, because you've got to take into consideration how much damage your weapon does, but you also need to consider the kind of monster you're trying to bring down and how sharp your particular weapon is as well. Because if you have the dual blades, for example, those are really sharp, and so they can get through the hide of some of the bigger monsters, whereas if you're using, you know, the great blade or some other sort of monster, for example, you may not be able to actually penetrate the hide of the monster that you're trying to bring down. So, or you may, or for example, the great sword, it may be sharp for a while, but as you go on through the fight, the sharpness decreases fairly rapidly on some weapons, whereas some weapons, they stay sharp for a long time. And so there's so much strategy in this game, and managing all of that kind of stuff is really, really, it's really fun. And it's, I can see why it's such a, why it's such a draw for so many people, because you really have to stay on the ball, and you really have to, there's so much strategy there that is just really fun. There's a whole that, it doesn't even get into all of the crafting, where you can craft traps. You can poison some meat and leave it out for the monster, and it will eat it and then become poisoned and then start taking poison damage. Or you can leave some sort of other toxin that will make it fall asleep or paralyzed, and there's traps, you know, like actual net traps that you can do similar things with. Like, it's a really, really deep game, and it's really, really fun. The last thing I'll say is when I played online with it, I was playing with some people, and I mean, these people are clearly Monster Hunter veterans, know what they're doing. And I was like, oh, I've been playing this game for like 3 hours, having fun, guys. And so I like go into the same area that I've been for the whole time that I've been there. But you know, going in there with a bunch of other people, and we've accepted a separate mission that I've never done before. And instead of bringing down this usual sort of, like a Jaggy, like they call it like the Great Jaggy, which was in the demo, it kind of looks like the Dilophosaurus from Jurassic Park, you know, the one that brings down, Newman in Jurassic mm-hmm. Park, right? It kind of looks like that. Those are what I was fighting, but I mean, we go into the same area, and all of a sudden, this enormous black dragon that's just shooting like this, like crazy black magic, black flames out. It was incredible. It was really, really fun, and they were just like, well, hey, man, just stand back, because if you die 3 times, then we're all gonna lose the mission. So just run around and just watch. because there was at least one, there were several times where I would like, we had actually failed the mission because I was like trying to get in there, and they're like, just watch and let us deal with it, because I literally would take one hit and just go down. So
that makes you feel good.
Yeah. I was like, yeah. All right. Sorry, guys.
I have experienced the same thing, but that would be me playing Destiny with my friends online.
Yeah, it's,
and that's I had a similar with Diablo 3, which I didn't want to play online for that exact reason. Mm-hmm. I wanted to try to get through the game myself. I couldn't beat Act 2 normal because in previous Diablo games, if you die, you could just portal back in and keep whacking on them. Mm-hmm. But in Diablo 3, when you die, the whole event restarts.
Yeah.
So if you're playing solo, you got to do the whole thing on one life.
Yeah,
makes you feel worse as a gamer than to hear the statement of, how about you just sit back there and watch?
Yeah, here, let us carry you. Yeah, it is such a fun game, though. I really do enjoy it. I can see why it's such a big thing, and I'm really looking forward to getting more of that Nintendo character DLC. I do have... You have like a character companion that follows you around. He's a feline, I think is what they call him. It's basically just this cat. You probably saw that the weird trailers in a Nintendo Direct a while ago where they were dressed up as Mario and Luigi. I have one that's dressed up as Mario right now, and it carries this huge hammer. But they've also announced DLC or something. I don't know if it's paid DLC or not, but there's going to be like Link costumes, Samus costumes. You can dress up your, like, for your actual character. You can also get costumes and stuff like that to make your companion look like Isabel from Animal Crossing, or Mr. Rossetti from Animal Crossing. Apparently that's coming. You can make them look like Blanka or Chun-Li from Street Fighter, in all sorts of weird stuff. So I'm looking forward to seeing that kind of stuff as well as the game progresses and moves forward. But for now, if anybody's playing Monster Hunter and they haven't gotten their cool Mario or Luigi, you had to choose Mario or Luigi, so I chose Mario. You can choose that, and it's a free download for free DLC right now. So right on. Yeah, so that's Monster Hunter. I'm enjoying it. If anybody wants to play, hit me up on Twitter. Or just on our account at Nintendo Dads, or for on my Twitter account at ZACERICKSON, and we can play. So we're gonna take a quick break and listen to our last week. We requested a fan review of Kirby and the Rainbow Curse, and by Brett, and we're gonna play that right now. And when we get back, we will have our discussion of the news.
Hello Nintendo Dads, this is Brett here, following up with a review of Kirby and the Rainbow Curse. This is pretty similar to Kirby Canvas Curse, I believe, that was on the DS around 2005. So all the gameplay takes place on the Wii U gamepad using your stylus. None of the other buttons work, and you actually end up playing the entire thing on the gamepad screen if you're playing solo. So just know that going forward. Basically, it consists of 7 worlds, 3 separate stages, and then a boss battle. You control Kirby using the stylus, and you can tap him and send him in a direction, and also use the rainbow rope or paint, whatever it is, and just guide him to collect stars. And you can also tap Kirby when an enemy's coming up or a block that can be broken. And there you can power through them or stop, crush the enemy, what have you. So whatever direction you draw the line in, that's where Kirby will move. By collecting 100 stars, it'll give you the ability to tap Kirby and basically supercharge him. He briefly enlarges, and you can power through some bricks or blocks that might not be able to be powered through otherwise. And that can lead to continuing on to another part of the level or finding various objects. You can also use the rope to temporarily stop water coming from waterfalls, which prevents Kirby from moving. There are also sections and stages where you can remove clay walls and stars will appear and you can collect them. And of course, you can also use it to prevent bad guys from getting at you. It's a good defense mechanism. There are a few levels that Kirby can transform into a torpedo, and he can shoot. There's a submarine, airplane, a tank. These sorts of levels tend to be more on the difficult side. Actually, you have to guide Kirby while he's got these new mechanics and these new shapes that he's taken shape of, and just that's where the difficulty comes into play. But there is something called multiplayer mode, which you can use Waddle Dee, and basically he has the ability to jump, jab enemies, briefly hover, but the good news is he can also pick up Kirby. So if you have an inexperienced player in the room, they can get a hold of the gamepad, and they can basically just start drawing platforms for you, pick up Kirby, and then jump around and get to the level for you. That's basically it for the story mode. There are several other bonus things you can collect, such as like a treasure chest and health bars and one-ups and all that good stuff. And interestingly enough, the treasure chest at the end of the level, once you beat it, you tap on it and you get a figure, which very much represents somewhat looking like an amiibo. So there's some more figures you have to collect. That's story mode. So in challenge mode, it gives you 15 seconds on the clock to grab a treasure chest, and I believe it usually consists of 4 stages. So you have to, again, draw your rainbow line to get to that treasure chest, avoiding enemies and that timed matter. And I think you have to get all 4 to really get a completion. There is amiibo support with this. It works once per day. Kirby will give you is a star dash at any time you'd like, and basically that's the equivalent of getting or collecting 100 stars, and that again is where you tap and hold Kirby and he becomes enlarged and you can bash through a bunch of things. King DDD, I don't have or was not able to get my hands on one of those, but he does give you 2 extra health bars, so on the later levels or on a boss level that might work well. Because running into bad guys or running out of rope can lead you to die. The Meta Knight amiibo, he gives you more of a power boost for a dash attack. But it is worth noting, again, that you can only use these once per day. I think it says something how the amiibo needs to rest. But also, if you die, you lose that amiibo upgrade, if you will, and you can't use it until the next day. So, but it's worth noting that this game is beautiful. The colors are fantastic. It's unfortunate that you spend most of your time staring at the gamepad. So if you can play it with multiplayer, that's the best way to experience it and see all the cool colors and claymation style they have going on. There, you can even notice fingerprint indentions in these characters, and it just looks great. It is on somewhat of the easy side, but I would say a lot more difficult than the average Kirby game. Runs just because it can be tricky trying to make him go where he needs to go, or he gets stuck while he's following the rainbow line. There is like a meter at the top, I should mention that, where you run out of line to send Kirby, but usually if you touch the ground, if there is ground to touch, it'll start regenerating itself. And there's also power-ups you can find within the level to regenerate that to get even higher. But overall, there's lots to collect. As I mentioned, the amiibo-like figures within the game that you can collect. They don't say they're amiibo, but they sure do look like it. You can view those and look at them in a 360-degree camera angle. There's music from the levels that you can collect. There's also some diaries that you can collect, and that's kind of an interesting thing where it kind of correlates with the level you just played and also lists some things that were going on and kind of adds to the story mode. A very unique gameplay here. Difficulty at times. Kind of a bummer that it's only stuck to the gamepad. It's still a great-looking game. For the price, I feel like you can't beat it. If I had to give it a score out of 10, I would say an 8. But for me, I'm a pretty big Kirby fan. So I liked it, and I don't know, maybe I think you should check it out considering the price point and all the unique gameplay it has.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. And we're going to start off the news here. So, Justin, why don't you lead us off here with the news for this week?
Sure. Yeah. So for the news for this week, one thing that actually kind of stood out was Iwata, during a recent press conference, made a statement that he believes that there could be one piece of software that could really turn around the Wii U and the Wii U's performance in the marketplace. And he actually referenced Pokemon as being that software that did it for the Game Boy. So I thought this was an interesting statement. What do you guys think? Agree, disagree that we could see one piece of software that turns around a console, or is it, you know, so much more nowadays?
It's interesting that he would reference Pokemon in particular, because that was such a... I actually kind of doubted this statement until he gave the mention of Pokemon, because it was so late in the Game Boy's life cycle that I'm like, oh, yeah, and it was a completely new IP. I can see it. I think that comparing the Game Boy and Pokemon to the Wii U and something, maybe a little bit of apples and oranges, simply because the handheld, first of all, how much was the Game Boy when those games came out? It was maybe $100, $150, maybe, right? If that, yeah. to get a Game Boy, versus the $350 that it's going to cost you to get a Wii U, or $300 if you're, you know, doing okay. So that's a pretty big thing that I think he's not taking into consideration. But having said that, they said that this time last year, I'm pretty sure I remember hearing it, you know, with Smash Brothers on the horizon. And I feel like he's kind of right, but at the same time, I don't think that, like, other than what's coming? Zelda's coming, and I think they're banking on Zelda this year. I don't know what else.
I think here's the thing. They've got Zelda. I think they're putting a little level of faith in Splatoon. And you think about it.
I don't think Splatoon's going to move the needle, though. Do you?
Well, like, I don't. At this point in the life cycle, I don't know if it does. But if you think about it, Pokemon came in as a new IP mm-hmm. when it was introduced to the Game Boy. So it was not a pre-existing IP, right? It wasn't a Zelda. It wasn't something else. But just the world kind of grabbed onto it. Now, I don't think you're going to have, and I think in a world nowadays where video game production and video games come out so rapidly, and what's hot now, 2 weeks later, isn't hot anymore, I don't think it has a game has a longevity that you would have seen something like Pokemon that just created this frenzy worldwide. I think they're hoping for a little bit of needle movement on something like Splatoon. But, sorry, if you look at the life cycle of the Wii U right now, their big name hitters have kind of already swung.
Yeah.
Right? You've got one or two people left in your bench that can produce well, but are, and you've got one Grand Slam hit probably, which is going to be your Zelda. But Star Fox is not going to slam it out the ballpark for you. That's not going to move more than Smash or Mario Kart or Mario 3D. I think Splatoon is going to be an early entry and might give you some traction, but not to any of these degrees. Their big hitters have already swung. I don't think that this will turn it around.
I don't either. Yeah.
I think it's interesting that he's thinking that way, and that also makes me fearful when that's the way you're thinking, right? In that, oh yeah, I just need this one thing, right? Like it reminds me of when a gambler, goes to Vegas and he's already in debt. I just need one big score to get myself out of this hole. And I don't think that's the case. I think instead you need to think of, we need to create a string or lineup of solid quality games that are exactly what our customers want. And I think that fundamentally boils down to some of the issues that we've talked about over the last several weeks, including stuff like voice chat in Splatoon. Yes, I know under normal circumstances, it won't be there, but I think some of those things have to begin to change a bit.
Yep.
To make them more, I don't use the word accessible, but to be like, okay, yeah, this is why. Because let's face it, we don't live in a generation anymore where people, gamers, have one console. It's not Nintendo versus Sega. It's not Nintendo versus Sony. It's Nintendo is trying to vie for a spot on your gaming shelf that includes games or systems like Sony the PlayStation 4 or Xbox, right? Nintendo has to find a spot on your shelf.
Yeah.
And then knowing that not every gamer can go out every single week or every single month and buy five games, you need to be more compelling than the other games on the shelf.
Yep.
Right? So, when 14-year-old Johnny is talking to mom and dad, who has a PlayStation 4 and a Wii U, and one of them I can play online with my friends and voice chat, and that'll be fun, and we can play together versus... Well, this one's got squids in it. Mm-hmm. And we can chat in a lobby, and they're almost the same price.
Yeah.
No duh, right? And unfortunately, especially when you're entering with a new IP like Splatoon, and I need to back this train up. And I apologize for my rant here. It's not that I'm thinking that Splatoon is a bad game. I'm very interested in it. I'm going to pick it up. I think it looks great. But I think fundamentally, Nintendo needs to take a step back and understand the products that they offer and how you need to create just more of a lineup, right? There's no one single game that moves consoles anymore.
Yeah.
It is a lineup of IPs that we trust. And I think, that was the problem that Nintendo had in this case, is that when the Wii U came out, they were reliant on third parties. They did not have their first party lineup ready. Mm-hmm. The third party lineup fell through because of no one wanting to move content over or port or whatever you want to say, or there's more movement on sales on 360 or PS4, that fell through. So all you're left with were these large gaps between first party games that were rolled out, and Nintendo's had to, in the last little bit, create, more buzz around them, more of a marketing push and hype, fill some of those gaps with indie games, which they're able to localize or not localize, but more foster and support. And so I think it's Nintendo really shifting their mentality to think more of a long-term strategy as opposed to the put it all on black and hope to God we're okay.
Yeah.
Because that's not going to pan out for them. So, and as a Nintendo, I think we've talked about this before. We're Nintendo fans. The three of us are. Absolutely we are. But we're also critical, right? And we're going to be pretty honest. And I think there's some mistakes that they're making.
Yeah.
But they're also doing some things really right. And I think, for everything that we have to say Nintendo is doing wrong, we also have to remember that Nintendo, of every company out there in the video game space, is the only company who is actually taking innovative risk and committing to it long term.
Yeah, I was just about to say the thing that I feel like maybe they're putting too much in, and maybe they're either trying to justify their investment in the gamepad, and they're sort of, you know, they're with things like Project Giant Robot and Project Guard. It sounds like, and they even reiterated this at the most recent investor meeting, that they're going to be they're continuously looking for new ways to take advantage of the gamepad. And when I hear stuff like that, I just think, no. Don't start doing weird stuff. Just make a good game, right? Like, right. I worry when I hear stuff like that, because, I mean, we saw it even in the Wii. Like, yes, the Wii remote was amazing, and motion control did great things for Wii Sports, and we don't need weird crap and where it's forced into everything. I just want a really good game. Luckily, Star Fox, I mean, just recently we saw news that Star Fox is going to be, there will be options to use classic controls. Like, they're not going to force you to use they're not going to force you to use the motion controls or the gamepad controls in the new Star Fox game, which is great to hear. That is probably the best news I've heard in a long time. But I feel like Project Giant Robot, is anybody really excited for Project Giant Robot? I know I'm not. I'm interested to see what I'll probably get it and try and, you know, see how it is, but I'll probably have like two or three sumo wrestles with a robot in my living room, and then I'll be like, all right, that was fun.
I actually had to try and, when you said Project Guard, I was just about to ask you, and like, could you remind me what Project Guard is again?
So maybe for our listeners, Project Giant Robot and Project Guard are two projects that are from Miyamoto that they showed off at E3. They were just demos. Project Guard was the one that is designed to have everybody, it's basically like a bunch of people sit around the TV, and it's like security guard the game, right? Where basically there are like nine different screens, and you're looking for the invaders to come, and where the invaders would be, on the different TV screens, and you would basically try and prevent them from entering the building that you're trying to protect. Project Giant Robot is the one that is controlled with the gamepad. Apparently a lot of it is like center of gravity, but it's basically like that sort of giant robot fighting in the city against another giant robot. And a lot of it, again, is using the gamepad's motion control sensors to control the robot. And it's sort of center of gravity, and you're wrestling, or sumo wrestling, basically. So yeah, both of those, again, interesting, but I don't know. That's not what I'm most excited about. And I definitely don't think it's going to turn the Wii U around.
No, I don't think it turns the Wii U around at all. In any context, and I'm willing to bet you that both those games will probably be eShop games for like $30 or $20. Like, I don't think it's going to be huge. You know, we have to remember that Nintendo is the company that has probably the strongest recognized video game IPs out there. And they are the company who has innovated, right? Like, for everything that Microsoft and Sony does, Nintendo paved that way, right? Their battle they had with Sega paved those ways. The directional button that you have, or the ABs, the shoulder buttons, the motion control stuff, right? Like, for everything that they have also failed at, like Virtual Boy, they've learned lessons and they make things better, right? So I just think that they have what it takes, but they have to think more long-term, as opposed to this kind of like, we just got to get ourselves out of this hole.
Mm-hmm.
And I will now get off my soapbox. And if you disagree with me, send your tweets to @Masson23 or @NintendoDads, and let's chat about this.
Totally. Yeah, or even just send us an email, and we'll continue the discussion next week as well. So definitely interested in hearing what you guys have to say for that. Moving on, we have something here about Nintendo licensing more tabletop games. What's this about, Justin?
Yeah, so I was going through some of the news feeds that we do, and for those of you that didn't recognize it, this is a bit of a slow news week. but there were a couple things that popped out. And what we saw is I actually saw Nintendo is starting to make some of these more moves. And we saw some communication about this about 9 months ago when they talked about them wanting to allow others to use their IP in a little bit of more ways than just, you know, here are the video games. So we actually saw, you know, I have at my house a Mario Yahtzee set, which is, for those of you know who play the game Yahtzee, you shake it up, the dice roll out, you have numbers 1 to 6, you got to collect sequences of it. In this case, it's the shaking box is a question mark box from Mario, and inside it is like the dice has star, has mushroom, has all kinds of stuff on it. But essentially, it's a game, and what we're seeing now is we're seeing Nintendo move more and more to using or allowing their licenses on other merchandise. So we're actually seeing some tabletop games that are coming up out soon, such as Tactics Super Mario, which looks like it's kind of like a tic-tac-toe-ish kind of game. We have a Zelda Yahtzee that's coming out. I think really, I mean, none of these are really striking my fancy. It's like, oh my gosh, I have to go get Zelda Yahtzee. Because really it's actually Yahtzee, and the way that it makes it, that it becomes Zelda is it's a treasure box is what you shake it in.
Nice.
But I think, you know, this kind of made me think of, you know, just Nintendo kind of stepping out there and letting their IP be used a little bit more than just video games. And I think traditionally we have seen Nintendo be very close with their IPs. Like, this is Nintendo property. This is our IP. Nobody touch it because we don't want you to taint anything on this. And I think they're right for that because I think, again, historically in the video game space, they have the most recognizable IPs. No doubt about it, right? Sony, Microsoft would be jealous to have the kind of IPs that are family friendly, that are recognizable throughout the world like Nintendo does. But I think we've seen, and this reminds me of the Netflix agreement that we heard about 3 weeks ago or conversations, Nintendo being a little bit looser with their IPs and allowing people to use them a little bit more. I think this board game or these games are being produced as an example of that. I think the, you know, despite YouTubers being unhappy about it, I think the YouTube creators content agreement that they're creating or establishing allows more content use of Nintendo products. I think the Netflix agreement has more. So I think we're seeing this interesting move, and I think this even corresponds a little bit with Nintendo's transition into the Amiibo space of toys and collectors or whatever you want to call it. I think this is a very interesting transition that we're seeing Nintendo come into with being a bit looser with their IPs. And even in the game world, right, we're seeing, you mentioned a couple moments ago, Zach, Monster Hunter 4, right? We have Monster Hunter or Mario and Luigi skins showing up in Monster Hunter 4. We saw Peach show up in Bayonetta 2 through skins or downloadable content as well. What do you guys think? Should Nintendo be more loose with their IPs to allow people to create content or things with it? Or do you think it dilutes the brand that is the IP? So let's say it's Mario or Luigi. What are your thoughts? Go.
I think that they're doing okay. I feel like you were saying, this whole Amiibo, with Amiibo, I feel like it's potentially the threat of watering things down too much, watering down the brand and making it too, you know, taking away the sort of the novelness of it, or the, you know, like if literally every single game let me, for example, put Mario in my game by putting my Mario Amiibo on my you know, on the bottom touchscreen of my 3DS, I feel like that would be a mistake. And I wonder what sort of safeguards they have in place for something like that. I'm not entirely sure. I actually was having a conversation with a guy at work today, and he was even kind of offering a flip side sort of argument where he was talking about, he had picked up the Mega Man Amiibo, and he was like, man, wouldn't it be awesome if I could get like Zero or, you know, I'm not too familiar with Mega Man, but I think it would be interesting if third parties could create their own Amiibo. Although I think that also gets kind of crazy muddy, but that's kind of tangential. I feel like they are opening up a little bit, but they're also kind of not, I kind of wonder sometimes on whether or not they're being strategic with it or if they're just opening it up in general. Because if they're just opening it up in general to, all right, now we have Yahtzee, now we have this, now we have that. Now we have another weird, crappy run of Mega Bloks or Connects or something, right? Like if they water it down too much, if they're not strategic enough with it, then they are going to water down the brand. But if they were a little bit more choosy about what they were doing, then I feel like it would be a little bit better. You know what? Just because there's a lot of it doesn't necessarily mean it's better. And so really making sure that when they do it, that it's quality stuff. So I guess that would be my take. What about you, Jesse?
Jesse, you're awfully quiet.
Jesse?
Did we lose Justin there? Just as he was trying to bring me back in? Yeah, it's kind of a fine line, I think, between getting your name out and doing it so much that you dilute it. I don't think they want to, as you said, you know, throw Mario into every game with an amiibo, but throwing Mario into other non video game related things, like, you know, a new board game or other, like a card game or things like that, I think wouldn't hurt it as much and get more people playing Mario games. And when a new Mario game hits, then more people may be interested in it.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Oh, Justin, are you gone again?
Nope, still here.
Okay, cool. Well, right on. Yeah, that's I agree. It's definitely something I'm looking forward to seeing what they do. But with such a huge push with Amiibo, I think that the toy store. It's funny. For example, I went into Toys R Us the other day because I was checking to see if I kind of have this lap right now because the new Avengers Lego sets are out and I'm a huge Lego fan and a huge Marvel fan. And so that's like, oh man, that's awesome. It's just a thing I enjoy. So I kind of make this lap where I go into the Amiibo section and see if there's any rare Amiibos. Then I'll go and see if the new Avengers sets are out yet. And then I kind of just kind of make my rest of my lap and then leave. But it's interesting because there are still like this whole other section of Nintendo toys within Toys R Us that are not Amiibos. And I'm like, why? I don't want any of these when I could be buying Amiibos instead. You know, but here is this Link figure that is, you know, like more of an action figure and stuff like that. And so it's stuff like that where I'm just a little bit confused of like, why are both of these here? Why are they not being a little bit more, you know, the idea of scarcity and stuff like that, where it's just like, I don't need a Link amiibo and a Link action figure and a Link this and, you know, four different Mario.
You're referring
figures.
To like the Jack specific types
or even just
Jack toys?
Specific ones. The ones that are like the World of Nintendo, I think is what the packaging says.
Specific.
Is that what that is? Yeah. Yep. And I think it's
sure.
Yeah. I don't know. What do you think about, I know Justin, you've got like a sweet Mario on your desk at work. So.
Yeah, I do. I have a from Namco Bandai. I had shipped in from Japan, actually. Through Amazon, I got it for $30, but it's 30 points of articulation. And I don't really collect action figures very often, but it was just one of those things. I was like, it comes with, you know, question blocks and everything, and it's licensed by Nintendo, and it looks quality and it's sound and it's good. And I've looked at the ones that Jack Specific does, and I'm like, they're not bad, but they're just not, they feel toy-ish as opposed to, I don't want to use the word collector, right? Because the one that I have at my desk, I've actually been able to like put in a stance and it actually looks like the right of the game, and people have come by and they're like, oh my God, that's a sweet, you know, Mario. I was like, yeah. And they're like, where did you get that? And they ask questions, whereas opposed to if I got the one from Toys R Us, the Jack specific ones, I'm like, no one's going to ask me that question. I guarantee that right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of like those. What's the brand? Is it Nendroid? I think it's a Japanese Japanese brand. There was a really cool Pokemon trainer one that came out not too long ago. There's a really cool Toon Link. That's really awesome.
I tried to get that Toon Link when I was in New York in October, and they were all sold out.
Oh, yeah, no. So that's, and those things are like $50 a pop, right? And so, I don't know.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah, very cool though. I definitely, I'm excited to see more, but again, I don't want to see garbage. And that is my fear with some of the stuff I've been seeing. So, right on. Moving on to the last story of the day, we're going to talk a little bit about, now, this is really interesting. This has been going on for, I think, I want to say like 5 years or something that they've been making this game. About 2 years ago, they really stepped into new ground. And this is, of course, Mother 4 game that's coming out. And initially it was going to come out, I think last year it was delayed. And then now it's coming out in hopefully June. But I'm going to just play this. You guys won't be able to hear this music. I'll see if I can get the music to play a little here. Maybe? Loading. Never mind. Oh, there we go. Yeah, so anyways. So this is Mother 4. Now, what I think is really, really interesting about this is, for those of you who are not aware of Mother, of course, that's Earthbound. Is Mother 2. It's the only one that's been localized for the United States and or North America. But Mother 4 is an entirely fan-created project that is an entire game. The art style looks exactly like like Mother 3 and all of the sort of Mother games. And they're just going to release it for free for PC and Mac and all of those things once it's done. Which is great. And so it's, I don't know, did you, either of you guys watch this trailer yet?
No, I haven't had a chance to yet.
Yeah, it looks pretty great.
Neither have I.
Yeah, and it definitely looks like a very close, there's a link in the show notes there for you guys if you want to watch it. But basically it's a full Japanese RPG and it'll be free to play. And they've already asked people have asked them, there's like an FAQ on their website saying, what are you going to do if Nintendo tells you not to, if they, give you a cease and desist or something like that? And they said, well, we'll just change a bunch of the wording and we won't call it Mother, we'll call it something else. And we'll change enough of the wording in the game so that it doesn't have any, trademark stuff in it. And we'll just release it anyway. And everybody will know that it's still Mother. We'll just release it and change all the wording in it. So it looks really cool.
This is such an interesting scenario, right? Because this is not just the only IP that we see where people are so passionate about it. Like, I think, a lot of us grew up with great games growing up that just the producers are no longer, or the companies are no longer creating. So people are either having to create fan produced content, or pray and hope that company one day, starts making the next one. And an example of this is also, obviously Capcom and Mega Man. And we see that new production, Mighty No. 9, because basically Capcom said, we ain't making no more Mega Man, so have a great day. But this is interesting because I think, if for example, and we talked about Nintendo being looser with their IPs as of late, if for some odd reason they get a cease and desist order from Nintendo for this, I would be greatly disappointed.
Oh, totally, right? Man.
Because not only, this is good for Nintendo in a couple of ways. A, they're getting people who are interested in a series who may not have heard of it. B, you're having someone create generate marketing on your behalf. You're having, your fans express interest enough that they're devoting it. So you're celebrating success and creativity. Now, there may be a statement of like, hey, listen, we would like to take 10% of the IP or the cost, whatever it is, or something, right? But at the same time, I mean, you look at what Nintendo's done with the YouTube Creator Program, and the cut they're taking for that. And I mean, yes, it's a start. It's better than them just saying you can't do anything at all. But they're so stringent on sometimes their IP guidelines that I feel like they probably will get a cease and desist order.
I almost guarantee it, dude. There is way that they won't.
Like, they'll get one, but it's unfortunately, I think it's not in Nintendo's best interest at all to do that.
Yeah. Well, I think from a, I don't know copyright law enough to know, and trademark and all that kind of stuff, but I almost feel like they have an obligation to send them a cease and desist for no other reason that, like, if they don't, and then somebody actually tries to go and make money off of it, or if they try and do something else with the brand, and then, and they're like, well, you let them do that, and because you didn't, you know, I think that there is some sort of, if they neglect their copyright, then they lose their claim on it, or the trademark, or something like that. I don't know enough about it to speak confidently, but my understanding is that they probably have an obligation to take legal action for this, not necessarily legal action, but the cease and desist, right? That would be my suspicion, is that they definitely will get it, but that isn't necessarily going to prevent them from releasing this game.
Was Nintendo the original creator of the game, or was it a third party?
I don't know if it was developed in house, but it was definitely published by it was definitely released by Nintendo.
Mm.
It is definitely a first party game. Although again, it may be a second party, you know, the sort of developed out of house and then released by Nintendo.
Yeah, I'd be interested in understanding like where Nintendo's IP ownership of that actually resides, and if it even resides with Nintendo other than being the publisher. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, what actual rights that they potentially may or may not have.
Mm-hmm. But again, either way, I mean, it's they're doing everything in their power, you know, the guys behind this, they're doing everything in their power to encourage anybody who's interested in this project to go, basically, like every single trailer is like, go and buy Earthbound on Virtual Console on Wii U. It's there. We want you to support the IP and to support Nintendo, you know, and stuff like that. So, like, very much supporting, you know, and trying not to take away from Nintendo's ability to monetize the IP as well. So, I'm really excited for it. I think it'll be a really fun game to play through. And again, having played through Mother 3, it was a lot of fun, although I still need to actually play Earthbound. It's weird that I've played Mother 3 and not Earthbound. I don't know. Cool. Well, hey, let's move on to some fan interaction real quick, guys. How does that sound?
Do it.
Awesome. So it looks here like we have a review on iTunes. Who wants to take that?
Jesse?
Jesse, was this from you? Is this from the American store?
This is from the America store, yes.
Awesome.
Almost a North American, but I keep forgetting that the Canadian iTunes store is different than the American iTunes store.
America.
And we don't get to see each other's reviews. So I'm not sure how this name is pronounced, but it's a Smearzy or Smearzy.
Nice.
Writes, great podcast. The insight and opinions that you discuss are incredible. I look forward to every episode. So short, sweet, to the point. I like it.
Right on. And thank you so much for that review. Honestly, everybody, I know we say this almost every episode, but that is honestly, reviewing us on iTunes is by far the best way to support the show currently, because it gets us into the ears of more people. And we just love that, and we appreciate the reviews. So keep them coming. And in the near future, we may have some sort of, you know, fun stuff for all of our listeners and things like that. So, in general, go ahead.
Speaking of kind of fan interactions as well, obviously, earlier today's show, we played the clip from Brett and his review of Kirby. We love hearing that information, guys. We talked about last time that we can't review every game. Big thanks to Brett, who spent the time to review that, sent in our audio clip. We were able to listen to it. Guys, what did you think of the review, and what were your thoughts of the Kirby?
I thought it was great. It sounds awesome. I definitely am more interested than I was before he sent in that information. We kind of talked about before the show, I really wish that we had like this unlimited supply of funds and just ability to,
and time.
Yeah. both of those. Yeah. It's definitely something that I wish that I had the time and money to play, because it sounds really fun. But there are just so many other things that I am kind of, you know, are higher up on my list. Codename Steam is only 2 weeks away. You know, and Xenoblade, which, oh my gosh, I don't know if I'm not even sure if I'm ready for that game, but I'm interested in playing
your body is not ready.
My body is not ready and neither is, you know, my time. But I'm definitely interested in it still in the new 3DS game that comes out in April. And then we've still got, you know, in May, we've got Splatoon and Puzzle and Dragons both coming out that month. Plus, we've also got Mario and Donkey Kong. Tipping Star is coming soon. Like, holy crap, there's a lot of games coming still.
Yeah.
So, but thanks again, Brett. That was actually, yeah, I mean, it was awesome. And if anybody else is wanting, like we've said before, we've kind of got an open door policy on fan submitted content. So don't just limit it to reviews. You know, feel free to kind of get creative if you want. If you want to have a three act sort of audio drama, we'll put it at the end of the show, whatever.
Yeah, and if you disagree with something that we said on the show as well, right? Our opinions are the opinions of three podcasters sitting around, right? But if I was ranting 30 minutes ago, if you disagree fundamentally with something I said, I would love to hear you disagree with me about that. As long as you come up with a solid disagreement and not just you're dumb, then I would love to hear that.
Actually, you know what? I kind of want to hear just the you're dumb part too. So it's
you're dumb. We're going to get a lot of emails of voice.
That would be just you're dumb. Yes.
Right on.
I would say actually for Brett's review, Brett, you actually pushed me to the threshold of actually wanting to pick Kirby up. So, and to play with my daughters. Cause I talked about it before. I was like, I don't know, maybe, but I think the way that you approached the review and the content that you provided really made me think this could be a really great game to play with my kids, and how much they'd actually enjoy it. And it's a good couch game for us to play. So going back to Zach's point, unlimited funds and time are the challenge I have. But this has now actually moved up my list from like number 10 up to more close like a number 5. So thank you, Brett, for that. Awesome job.
Right on. Well, that's...
And at the same time, he kind of solidified my choice to not want to buy it. It was just kind of completely weird that... But, like a good review, he mentions some cons, he mentions some pros. And, I think the big... con on my end is the fact that you have such a beautiful high def screen,
yeah, that
you can't really look at it. You have to look at it on the gamepad to play.
But I guess I'd ask you this, Jesse, when you're playing Captain Toad Treasure Tracker, are you looking at your big screen or are you looking at your gamepad?
I'm looking at the big screen.
Really? Because I've been watching my kids, and actually even how I play is I watch the gamepad.
Hmm.
And it's almost like we're playing on the couch. You know, my daughter's sitting beside me. She's playing on the couch looking down the screen or the gamepad. But the rest of us are all observing it on the big screen watching her play. And I've noticed that for the way that I play the game too. So I don't know if it's such a huge change.
It would make a difference for me if the screen on the gamepad was better. You know, if it was a higher def screen or if it was better colors, like it kind of has a crappy contrast ratio, you know, where it's kind of the darks aren't very dark. The brights aren't very bright. The saturation's not all that great. All that kind of stuff.
We want the Vita screen on the gamepad.
Yeah. Right. Like that's exactly what I'm talking about. I feel like I'd be okay. I'd be better with it then. It doesn't even necessarily bother me that it's a stylus control. It's that it's, you know, I actually kind of like the stylus control, but it still doesn't look very good. So,
and as you said, Justin, it'd be a good game for your kids. My kids are now getting to the point where my youngest one's 13. None of them care about Kirby anymore. So,
yeah, that's fair, right? Like, I got a 4 and a 6-year-old, so this is going to be right up their wheelhouse for sure. But yeah, to your point, if you've got older kids, this is probably nowhere in their wheelhouse of like, yes, this is exactly what I want to be playing right now, Dad. Like, but for the kids,
real,
it's
Dad.
Just, yeah, no, I don't even want to hang out with you, Dad.
See, that's true too. But so in general, I've never really enjoyed Kirby games, but I did like the one on the Wii with the yarn.
Epic Yarn.
Oh, Epic Yarn.
Epic Yarn. So.
Oh, speaking of which, when is that game coming? When is Yoshi's Woolly World coming out?
I don't, that I'm not sure, but that is a game I am interested in.
I don't think Nintendo knows either.
That's probably true, too. Yeah, but the Yoshi game is what I'm looking forward to playing.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I've never really liked the Yoshi games. So who knows if I'll like this one or not.
Crazy. Right on, man. All right. Well, I think with that, I'm going to cue up our final music here. And we're going to get started on our way out of here. Where's my music? There it is. It's always so quiet, and I never know if it's coming. Okay. So, thanks, everybody, for listening this week. You can check us out at vgtribune.com. That's where our website is, where the show is hosted. You can follow us on all of the social medias. That's Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Google+. Check us out at Nintendo Dads, and you'll find us. Email us at nintendodads@gmail.com. Twitch.tv/NintendoDads is where you can watch our live show every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Mountain Time. That would be 8 o'clock Pacific. And what is that? Is it 11 Eastern? Time is hard.
11 Eastern. And that's presuming we're on time.
Yeah, which is never...
Unlike tonight.
Yeah. As well, you can call in and leave us a voicemail at 929-25-NDADS. That's 929-256-3237. Or you can, again, just send to the email address with an audio clip like Brett did, and you can be a member of the podcast as well. Big thanks to OC Remix for the music that we have throughout the show, as well as to Carter Johnson for providing our awesome artwork. Check her out at megacarter.tumblr.com. And, of course, like we said before, download from iTunes. You can check us out on Stitcher as well as vgtribune.com. Do us the biggest possible favor to help the show and leave us a review on iTunes. Share the show with your friends and help us out to get our show out to as many people as possible. If you think that this is a great show and you know somebody who would appreciate it, let them know and we'll be forever grateful. Jesse, Justin, do you guys have any closing thoughts as we head out tonight?
No, just play more games and let us know about it.
Awesome. All right, well, have a good week, everybody. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
On the mixer.
On the mixer.